Welcome to the August edition of our audio feature and the latest installment of the editor's overview of the current issue of the Journal of Cardiac Failure. My name is Paul Hauptmann. I'm editor-in-chief of the JCF, and today I will be speaking with Nihar Desai of Yale University, who, along with a co-author, provide our readers with a very timely review of payment reform and the impact it may have on heart failure. I can think of no topic more timely, and an author no better prepared to address the issue. And we'll get into some of these issues that are raised in the review shortly. First, however, we begin with our editor's page. Mike Rich, senior associate editor, discusses that age-old topic, the impact factor. It's something that weighs on the minds of journal editors everywhere, and our readers might find it interesting. Olga Lezhinska-Roka of the University of Porto Medical School publishes a paper entitled Prognostic Effect of the Dose of Loop Diuretic Over 5 Years in Chronic Heart Failure. This is an age-old issue of the chicken or the egg with respect to whether loop diuretics are a surrogate or etiologically related to outcomes in heart failure. It appears once again to be the chicken or maybe the egg. It's a marker for advanced disease, but is not causing advanced disease. Robert Page includes a very thoughtful editorial. I don't have to remind you that it's summer, and in that context, what could be better than to read a fascinating review entitled Heart Failure and Thermoregulatory Control, Can Patients with Heart Failure Handle the Heat? By Bruce Balmain and colleagues. Naveen Kapoor and the group at Tufts present a clinical investigation entitled Acute Hemodynamic Effects of Intra-Aortic Balloon Counterpulsation Pumps in Advanced Heart Failure. Just when you thought you knew everything about balloon pumps, this paper is fascinating and an important addition to the literature. Now I turn to Nihar Desai, who along with Dushyant Srinivasan has written an important and timely review about payment reform entitled The Impact of the Transition from Volume to Value on Heart Failure Care, Implications of Novel Payment Models and Quality Improvement Initiatives. Obviously, this is a moving target and hence a real challenge to write, but regardless of whether we call our healthcare system Obamacare or Obamacare Light or Trump Care or something else, clearly changes are either here or are on their way in the near horizon in terms of payment reform. In that context, Nihar, maybe you can begin by telling us what are some of the key changes that you think may alter the way we think about the delivery of heart failure care and the reimbursement that follows.
Thanks so much, Paul. I'm really delighted to kind of have a chance to talk to you and talk to the readers of the journal about this topic. And so what we sort of wanted to do was just highlight some of the, you know, large-scale policy initiatives and alternative payment models that are beginning to take shape. And I think, as you aptly pointed out, it's very much a moving target. I think what I would say, you know, for kind of painting the broad landscape is that we're trying to find ways to move away from reimbursement that's based on volume to reimbursement that's based on value. And so what does that mean? That means that payments, or at least some component of a payment to a provider or a hospital, is now going to be tied to the quality of care that's administered or the outcomes that are achieved for the patient. And so that really does represent a paradigm shift, if you will, that before it was simply volume-oriented, so the more you did, the more you got paid, without any sense of, well, was that care appropriate? Was it high quality? Did we actually benefit the patient? And this is kind of a broad transition, a broad transformation that's happening in the healthcare system. I think Medicare, as the largest insurer and payer of healthcare, has really been kind of driving a lot of this thus far. And it will be interesting to see how it plays out. With a new administration, some new ideas, healthcare reform again in the news. It'll be interesting to see how it continues to iterate and evolve. But I think the broad theme is, hey, we're moving away from volume and we're moving towards value, and that means, you know, how do we sort of create a payment system that is then commensurate with those values and those policy goals.
Well, I think you outlined really nicely in the paper the different models that have been proposed. It raises a number of questions, however. One is, are you confident that the ways in which quality and outcomes are being measured are reasonable facsimiles of what's going on in the clinic? And if so, what do you think clinicians should think about in the near term as they contend with these changes?
Yeah, it's a really great question. And I guess what I would say is that this is an evolving area of science and policy that I think everyone agrees, I think, at least in concept, that, you know, we should be measuring, you know, what we're doing, and that is foundational for, you know, improving the quality of care that's actually delivered by the healthcare system. And then, of course, we come to the point of, well, who decides what we're going to measure and what things should we measure and how do we adjust for the differences in clinical severity that, you know, that we see. And I think, you know, those are some of the central challenges that measure developers and policymakers are struggling with. So let me sort of highlight, you know, a couple of different things. So I think broadly, when we think about, you know, measuring or quality measurement, we sort of think about various domains of measures, and we think about process measures. And I think, you know, every provider in the heart failure space is certainly, you know, that's not a new concept, right? Thinking about the provision of beta blockers for patients with reduced ejection fraction heart failure, or ACE inhibitors, or aldosterone antagonism. You know, those are all important process measures grounded in very high quality evidence codified in clinical practice guidelines. And so I think one way for us to at least, you know, begin to enter into this area is to say, well, hey, I mean, maybe we should be looking at performance for those process measures. And then that has to be sort of counterbalanced with the fact that ultimately what we care about is not the provision of a particular, you know, medication, but it's actually the end results and the outcomes that are achieved for patients. You know, are patients living longer? Do they feel better? Are they able to have the kind of quality of life that they want? And so I think on the policy side and the measure development side, there is a continual need to try and refine and iterate measures such that we're balancing and I think actually blending process measures and clinical outcome measures. And I will tell you, I think that Medicare, again, in its early phases of these alternative payment programs, has tried to very much balance those and to try and integrate various domains that all give a slightly different lens into the quality of care that's delivered.
So many of our readers are also deeply invested in the care of patients with advanced heart failure, everything from standard medical therapy to LVADs and transplant. To what degree will these payment reforms impact that extreme of heart failure care?
Yeah, that's a really, really important question and an area, I will tell you, that's been the subject of much, you know, debate with Medicare and measure developers. So, you know, we at CORE have the privilege to kind of work closely with CMS to develop these quality measures, specifically the readmission and the mortality measures that are now embedded in large-scale national policy initiatives. And so for the readmission measures, the mortality measures, and the payment measures that are sort of the newest in our measure development portfolio, patients with advanced heart failure, so specifically those patients with ventricular assist devices and patients that have undergone transplant, are actually excluded from those quality measures. And so we agree, Paul, with you, and I'm sure all the people that take care of these patients, that this is a highly specialized therapy for a very highly selected group of patients. And we don't think that the current measures that we have and the risk adjustment, you know, algorithms that we use can adequately integrate the clinical complexity of these patients. And so after lots of discussion back and forth with various stakeholders, I think your point is an incredibly important one, that those patients are no longer included in the measures.
Who knew that listening to the audio feature for the August issue would get such a piece of good news? So, Nihar, thanks for that. And I want to also personally thank you and Dr. Srinivasan for taking on this somewhat difficult assignment and for shedding light on such a complex and, frankly, politically charged topic. So congratulations on the paper.
Well thank you. We're delighted to.
Where this concludes the July audio, across at the August audio installment. Keep your eyes open for some interesting issues coming up in September and October. The September issue is always a big one because it also includes the abstract supplement to the annual meeting of the Heart Failure Society of America. This is Paul Hauptmann, editor of the JCF, thanking you for listening and reading the Journal of Cardiac Failure.